I spent this afternoon building Dyson spheres.
What? You can't do that by yourself. You need at least like three other people to absorb all the radiation emitted by a star.
Look, phase one, build a giant mecha. Phase two, build a bunch of factories that build the parts of other stuff. Phase three, question mark. Phase four, absorb all the energy of the sun.
Profit, whatever the energy absorption version of just profit is.
Look, Mr. Burns built the shade over Springfield. That worked out well for him. I don't know if I ever saw the end of that episode, but I feel like it's a good strategy. That game.
Never really saw you as an industrial magnate before, but I guess, you know, people pivot careers all the time.
Is there something broken about my psyche that makes those kind of factory slash world devourer games so compelling to me?
I was not. So I sat in on a video and watched Vinny play that game this week. And I don't know why it didn't occur to me, but I was not ready for the world devouring aspect of that game. It's just like, to me, it was just a very positive, like, you know, it was an additive, like, oh, let's build this thing. Where you have to basically strip mine an entire solar system in order to do that.
Multiple solar systems.
It kind of escaped me that you essentially, you really would have to just eradicate every planet in the system to even come close to doing something like that.
I don't think there's enough. This is hazy memory, but I believe that there's not enough mass in the solar system to make even a ring.
Really?
Around the sun at the orbit that you would need to do a Dyson sphere for it to be stable.
So when you say the orbit you would need, is that like the minimum safe distance or is that more the optimal like energy absorption range?
Look, I'm not a NASA scientist, but my understanding is that you have to be a certain distance for the speed to go for it to rotate at a speed that it's going to give you 1G of gravity.
Okay.
When you're standing on the inside looking up at the sun.
Interesting. That's not the limiting factor I would have expected, but okay.
But also, like, even to do that, it would be like making an aluminum foil, like a thing a few atoms thick all the way around. We still don't have enough mass. So you got to get interstellar travel before you can even think about doing this.
We are nowhere near even a type two, not even a type one civilization yet.
No. Have you ever read like hard science fiction about like rings and have you read Ian Banks books?
No, I've always thought about I've read about him. I've thought about dabbling with his stuff.
So first off, only read his books that are by Ian M. Banks, because like those denote the science fiction books. The other ones are often disconcerting with wasps and things.
Interesting.
But the culture books are fabulous. And
yeah, I've heard.
Like are the best kind of weird, hard science fiction from the distant future. And they talk about like one of those books is set on a ring world that society collapsed on. And because there's no minerals and stuff buried in the earth underneath the bottom of the ring, it's just ring. Once society collapses, they can't start back from basics and rebuild it. It has to be bootstrapped by people outside the ring. So it's like there's like feral, I'm going to say humans, but I think they're probably not humans.
Okay.
On the that inhabit this ring in like a Neolithic world where they're taking scraps of metal and stuff they find from the environment and using those to make spears and shit.
Sounds
when
cheerful.
There's like laser engines and stuff all around and they just don't know how to use it because it's magic and demons and all that. He's very good.
That sounds very high concept. The book I was reading about by him recently, I think is a one off. I don't think it was part of any series, but I can't remember the name of it. It seemed to be like the actual plot, I think, was some kind of like spy fiction, like assassination plot, murder mystery, kind of high intrigue sort of thing. But the thing that caught my attention was that it was set on a rogue planet, which is to say a planet that has been ejected from its galaxy.
No, that's a culture book.
Is it really?
Yeah, or at least from its solar system, yeah.
Okay, but interesting. Yeah, but like what I gathered from reading the synopsis is that detail didn't even really have any bearing on the plot. I can really appreciate that you would incorporate such an exotic concept into your story and not even really focus on it. It's just kind of there.
Oh, yeah. Like it's those culture books are neat because they are in a distant enough future that like spaceships are sentient hive minds. This is what Elon Musk names the landing ships after, like the go not gently into this dark night or whatever the landing ships are named. Those are all culture ship names. And they're not like spaceships the way we think of spaceships is like a metal skin with stuff around them. They're just like force fields encompassing a mass of houses and stuff that just travels through space. And they just kind of go like they just don't stop. They just kind of keep going on these big routes and you can jump on and jump off. And there's smaller ones and bigger ones. And it's a trip. They're really good.
Like you said, magic.
Magic. Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad.
I briefly forgot the name of the show there. I'm not going to lie.
You could have fooled me. I did not notice.
The pause was very pregnant.
Seamless.
Look, sometimes things just, they just run out of juice and you forget their name. And then you just like everybody walks away and stops making it like maybe Google Stadia. I don't know.
That's true. That's wow. Incredible segue. Yes, we here we are recording. This is a rare late on a Friday recording. So bear with us. The show is a little all over the place.
It's also like 85 degrees in my office. Yeah, right now. I've been playing games in here with the door shut all day.
Warm here, too. I was enjoying the cold weather, but here we are.
Yeah, well, I had to take the sweatpants off and put on different sweatpants that are slightly warm, less warm.
The breathable.
But yeah, so there was Google Stadia news a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I've played a little bit of stuff on Stadia. Like I played PUBG sent me codes for PUBG on Stadia. And I
mean, I don't think I realized PUBG. I should know this, but I didn't realize PUBG was on Stadia for some reason.
Well, so I was interested in playing it because I wanted to see what rendering.
I should say. Sorry.
Well, I just want to see what rendering in the cloud did to desync, because like that game is a little bit desyncy at the best of times. And I wanted to see if moving the renderer back and transferring it to video was going to make that stuff go away. And it kind of it just changes the way it feels a little bit. But nobody ever really played it there. So it wasn't an issue.
No,
It didn't get an audience like it did on, say, like Destiny 2 has, it seems like, and some other stuff.
So, yeah, Google essentially has discontinued first-party development of games by its internal studios for the Stadia platform, and they're kind of talking about pivoting to some sort of technology licensing sort of situation.
Well, but they also said Phil Harrison said explicitly that they were just going to work with partners to bring games to the platform, develop games themselves.
Yes, yes, yes. The branded Stadia platform will persist, and they will continue to add third-party games to it. I don't know if they'll ever get around to what it seems like they should have done from the beginning, which is the flat subscription fee for a lineup of games, as opposed to purely selling games a la carte for money.
It seems
like, I don't know why they thought that was the way to go, especially with Google's reputation for killing things, which is the whole point of this conversation. With the extra ephemeral nature of buying games that only exists in a streaming format, like enough people are already skittish about buying digital games that at least still live on a hard drive under their TV. Like when you even take that out of the equation and it literally is not even in your house anymore. Like, I feel like, we're not really here to dissect their business model so much, but like, I feel like even that they were kind of shooting themselves in the foot from day one.
Well, like the biggest, if we want to postmortem the service that's not dead yet, the biggest mistake that they made was that when they launched this thing that was $120, $130 buy-in at the beginning, and they didn't actually like launch with any games really that used the features of it, nor were they working actively with third parties and saying, hey, we will pay you to bring your third party game. Like we will cover the cost of porting your third party game to our weird new platform because we want there to be a bunch of games. So they ended up launching with like a bunch of 3-4 year old games and like two original IPs that kind of nobody cared about. And then slowly rolled out other, like Destiny eventually came, like when Destiny 2 went free to play, it came to Stadia and a bunch of other kind of games like that landed. And then they had internal studios as well. But like I don't want to be the old guy that's talking about the Nintendo 64, but nobody would have bought that machine if it didn't come with Mario 64. And like something as weird and new as Stadia needed its own Mario 64.
Totally.
And
you get into the whole chicken and egg problem of like, how do you make games before there's a platform? But how can you have a platform when there are no games? I mean,
you write big checks, Brad. That's how you do it.
Yeah, but also, games take years to make and you need to do it in secret if you're not even talking publicly about the platform they're going to run on yet.
Well, and in addition to writing big checks, you also have to make those big investments. Like, it's not like Google doesn't have money to spend.
We will get into that later in this episode, because I think that is really the meta question I have around this, which is how does a company as flush with resources as Google kill stuff off like this? And I suspect there are probably deeply bureaucratic reasons for that, but we'll get there in a little bit. The upshot is they are no longer developing Stadia games themselves internally. They've laid off the people at the studios they had built to do that. The Stadia platform will be around, and they will continue letting for third parties put games on there.
Yeah.
But the kind of X factor to this, and probably the thing that's maybe the most relevant to this podcast, is this. I'm going to quote from this Kotaku article that Stephen Totilo wrote like minutes before the official blog post went up. He broke this news, and he's got a little bit more straight talk about what they're doing than Phil Harrison's blog post, which was a lot more corporate sounding. Google plans to begin offering its Stadia tech to publishers, opening up the possibility for Stadia to become the streaming tech for other video game companies, which sounds to me more like a middleware situation than like that. That doesn't sound like, hey, you're going to put your games on a platform called Stadia. You're going to get access to the underlying, kind of codecs and input latency minimization and whatever other like custom stuff they built in the stack to make Stadia run.
Yeah, they built custom video codecs and stuff for that thing. It's bonkers.
Like, is that what that line sounds like to you? Like, is this straight up going to turn into like a licensing operation?
To me, that says that if I have the right flags in my Google developer account, I go into the app console, then there's an opportunity for me to upload my Stadia app that then is delivered however I see. So like, it may not be something that you deliver through the Stadia service. It may be that, how all the high end games are landing on Switch these days. And it's like Hitman 3 is a streamed.
Yes.
Is a streamed version of Hitman running from the cloud someplace.
Yes.
That's my guess is what they're saying. Okay. Is like, look, so Google's weird in that they often have problems that normal companies don't have, in that, like when they launched Gmail, they had this problem in that they had a whole buttload of storage that they weren't really using for anything. And they're like, well, what can we do with the storage? Everybody's has run out of space in their email all the time. Let's give them a gig of email space.
What can we do with the storage? Let's just give it away.
Yeah. But I mean, in giving it away, they also developed a market for that. And then we all got addicted to the storage.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm paying money to Google every year because I have too much fucking email.
Yes.
Looking at that with compute, like they've added compute, CPU compute, they've added GPU compute, and that stuff's great for machine learning, but that market is relatively small. Like it's a market that uses a lot of that service, but it's not billions of consumers using it. It's hundreds of thousands or millions of people using that machine learning stuff. So what can they apply the resources to in slack time, even if it's a small, relatively small scale? At a consumer business worldwide, it's interesting. And the other thing, not to jump back a little bit, but the thing that when you read that Totilo quote from the Kotaku article, it makes me think that, look, realistically, if they're making bets and they've been given X number of million dollars, are they better off spending $50 million building a big AAA title internally that could be a hit or a miss one way or the other? Like that is a hard thing to do for people who've been doing it for decades. And companies that have been doing it for decades, like the fact that Ubisoft ships an Assassin's Creed game more or less every year is a miracle. So is it better for Google to spend that $50 million on one big, big ass AAA game? Or is it better for them to spend, a million or half a million getting 40 or 50 or more AAA games that they know are successes on that platform or from successful franchises? And like the latter is probably the better business decision. It isn't a big vote of confidence in the platform, though.
No, definitely not. Like, I mean, it certainly does make you wonder if the days are numbered for Stadia, period. Not just for first party, but just as a platform. But
I mean, look, Google kills anything at any moment. They'll kill it. Look,
right.
Search. We're turning it off. Search is going away. DuckDuckGoose is your new future. Enjoy it.
And again, that's why the game ownership issue was such a problem for me. I mean, conceptually, I was never going to buy one of those games anyway, because I wouldn't trust Google with something like that. But like, nobody should have, right? Because if that service does go away, what happened to those purchases? Like, I guess Google is a big enough company that like maybe they would do something for you if you would spend a bunch of money on the platform. I don't know what form that would take, but
I mean, it's all what will happen is all in the licenses. So like if the service goes away and it's Google's fault, then there's probably terms in the contract that you agree to when you sign up to for a Stadia account that say, hey, we will refund blah, 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 minus right. depreciation or whatever over the yeah. course of time. Or we'll give you a gift card for, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if this were a startup that had taken a bunch of VC to make this happen and it was their sole business model and they bet the farm on it and they went away, like that, you would just lose all that stuff, right? Like
isn't like Gaikai or OnLive.
Right. Right. It would just go poof. But yeah, Google obviously is, you know, being one of the biggest companies in the world, you would think they would at least do something for people that are stuck in that situation. But yeah, like, is there much more to expand on, you think, with this stuff about them extending the technology to other companies?
Well, I mean, I think the other companies to me says, hey, EA is releasing Madden and they want it to run on Switch, but it's not going to run on Switch, or they want it to run on phones, but it's too, you know, especially with ray tracing and stuff in the newer games that are launching on the new consoles, like that stuff. There's no hope of back. If you're there's a time in the not too distant future when games will be developed ray tracing first. Probably it's already happening, right? Because they'll start to assume that people have 2000 series NVIDIA cards and what is it? Big Navi, whatever the current gen ATI AMD cards are.
RDNA 2.
Thank you. Yeah. On PC.
And the big thing is the consoles, of course. Now that both consoles have it, that will start trickling down from there.
Yeah, so if you're looking at as a PC vendor, as a game publisher, do we write two full pipelines and do two full sets of the assets that are required to make ray tracing work and the traditional raster renderer work? Then do you go out and launch? Do you do that work, or do you just pay Google X number of dollars on every $60, $70 copy sold? So that you can put that game on Switch and hit the 60 million people or whatever own Switches now. Google, just talk to me.
They know. They're listening.
Fuck. But yeah, I mean, the point is, it's probably cheaper to pay to run it on Stadia than it is to build a second renderer if you're looking in the future 2 years.
Right.
And that's what Google's really good at, looking at the future and seeing, oh, is this a business that's going to grow, or is this a business that's going to fade? And they don't keep the ones that are fading around for very long.
Yeah, you can say that again. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
I wonder, especially in a marketplace like the Switch, like the eShop, I wonder how much the fact that a game is streaming starts kind of getting buried below the fold, or whatever the fold equivalent is on a store page. You know what I mean? Where like they sell the game, but they don't necessarily call attention to the fact that it's not running locally, that it's a streaming thing. I mean, I guess you always have to give people enough of a heads up to make sure their connections are adequate.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume, but at this point, everybody has, you know, Netflix, and like the connection for a 720p stream on a handheld Switch is not that much different than watching Netflix, right?
Right.
Yeah. Latency so probably matters more.
I guess the bigger question I'm wondering about is when in the consumer's mind that distinction stops mattering so much. Like,
yeah, I'm looking to see what Hitman looks like in the store. Here it is. Hitman 3 cloud version free. So I guess they do a demo so you can play it and get going. Like, the thing that's interesting to me about this is, for games, like if you look at Call of Duty, it's a bazillion gigabytes. I play Call of Duty maybe once a month. A 70 meg version of Call of Duty that just lives on my computer and I tap into the cloud whenever I want to play actually sounds like a much better way to play that than devoting 250 gigs of my hard drive to that right now.
Sure.
So I'm not averse to this. I think they it's called Hitman 3 cloud version, and it doesn't, the on the PC at least, the store page doesn't say anything about let's see, does it say you need a network connection? No, it just says cloud version. Oh wait, here we go. You can only download a free launcher to test the game for a limited amount of time. The game uses cloud streaming technology, and you require a persistent high-speed internet connection to play the game. If your connection becomes unstable, the service will disconnect after a few minutes. Please use the free launcher to test the availability and quality of service for your region. So there you go.
Yeah.
I think that's in the small print.
Okay. I want to say language like cloud version or cloud edition has started becoming pretty common. So
I wonder if you have to have, I guess you don't have to have online to play that because it's a single player game. And it doesn't say online required. Even though it is coming across the network. Weird.
Right.
What a weird future.
It's a very strange fact. Really did not expect it to spiral out in all these weird directions.
Me either.
So, I mean, I'm having to resist the urge here to talk about Stadia in the past tense. I apologize to anybody who still works on the platform. Like, in my mind, to a large degree, it's like, oh, well, it's over. Let's just talk about what it was and where they screwed up. But, it is still a going concern, but there are some things I want to talk about kind of from the perspective of, like, was this a screw up on their part?
Look, if the plan is we're going to reinvest the money that we were spending on first party dev into getting more third parties on the platform in a more timely manner, then they absolutely screwed up by not saying that.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it may be that Phil didn't want to come out and say something that was going to be thrown back in his face 6 months from now when they haven't landed any new titles and everybody's pissed off. But like, you know, either we're seeing death by a thousand cuts or a major shift in the plan. And they didn't communicate that particularly well.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah, you're right. This could very well just be a pivot that we look back on and say, like, oh, that's when Stadia actually took off. I mean, you know, they're putting it in TVs this year, finally, and kind of those meat and potatoes moves they needed to be making before now. But
does it work on the Chromecast that has a UI? The one with the remote?
I don't have a Chromecast. I don't know the exact distinction, but I do know that there are still Chromecasts out there that it does not work on.
Mm.
I know that's unfortunate. The one that you could buy as part of the actual Stadia starter kit, it worked.
Yeah. It's the Ultra, I think.
I want to say the newest model out of the box does not support Stadia.
Chromecast TV, I think.
I believe that's the case still. So like they've got, you know, I assume they did some measure of kind of data center build out to support this thing, right? Like now they've got all these racks of Stadia hardware sitting there.
Well, but racks of Stadia hardware are probably just GPUs and CPUs and boxes that are used for this and for the machine. Like if you haven't ever gone and logged into like the things that you get access to as a developer on Google or Amazon, AWS, whatever, like you can buy. When we were doing machine learning training, rather than run the machine learning training thing for a week in one of my engineers' basements, we just paid $50 for the same amount of compute time over an hour. Because like you're paying for compute cycles per hour, basically. And like you can use it for all sorts of weird stuff. If you have like data, if you have to munge a bunch of video, we used to use it to compress the video that before it went up on YouTube in the old days it tested. Like it's much more fungible than, hey, these are Stadia racks in a data center someplace. Okay.
It's not like that's the only thing they can be used for.
I mean, I don't know that for sure, but that's my assumption.
I mean, there was kind of a fair amount of fanfare when they first announced the platform about like, oh, we've just designed these custom server blades. They're more powerful than any console. So yeah, but they are bespoke to some degree is what the point that I'm making.
So all of their blades are bespoke, though, because they design all their own hardware at this point. It's not like they're buying blades and jamming, you know, 3080s or Titan RTXs into the blades.
Yeah.
Like it's just look. This is where Dyson Sphere Project comes in. They're not building computers. They're building Comptronium, right? Uh-huh. They're building matter that you can use for compute and storage without having to know anything about what the compute and store, what the matter is.
Slightly tortured analogy, but I think I'm with you.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. It's a weird way to think about computers when you're used to thinking about a motherboard and a CPU and RAM and a video card.
Yeah, and I assume if you were one of these companies that's using the Stadia tech to build a streaming game, you would probably also be in for time on their infrastructure to actually serve it, right? Because what else would you do?
Well, so, I mean, that's a licensing question. I'm really curious. I don't know if they do. So, like, do you just pay? Do they look at the amount of time it's going to take to play Hitman 3 and they say, okay, IO, you pay us X number of dollars distribution for every copy of this game that's sold? I don't know that IO is using Stadia for their backend on the Switch version of this game. But like, how does that work? Nintendo's, like, are you paying... If somebody goes in and plays 3,000 hours of Hitman 3, does that mean IO loses money on that game? Like, how does this all break down? I'm really curious about it. If at some point, if people keep playing that game for too long, or is IO going to have to turn off because they're like, you guys are costing, you've run 3,000 hours of this. You're costing us too much money. You're done.
That's surely, I mean, that could not be sustainable, right? Like, who would actually agree to terms like that?
Well, it's pretty cheap. I mean, compute's pretty cheap is the thing. I mean, it's not as cheap as storage, but it's trending cheaper. And that's like, that's where the Gmail thing makes a ton of sense, right? Like they're paying a lot of money for storage when they launched Gmail in 2003. But by 2010, the amount of storage that a Gmail account was a Gmail account took in their cloud was not even a rounding error for a rounding error. It was nothing, right?
Well, first of all, it was 2004. Does that sound right?
2003 on April Fool's Days when they launched Gmail.
Do you remember, was it a gig and a half?
1 gigabyte.
One flat.
And it increased as the longer your account was alive.
Right. Okay.
So it was there was a little ticker that was constantly going. They stopped that after a while because it turns out maybe not a great idea.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's weird. The whole thing is weird. I'm wildly curious to see what they do with this and what the direction that this takes is. And it seems like, the Google TV, the Chromecast with Google TV still doesn't seem to have a Stadia app on it that I can see.
If there's a bellwether for how much support this has internally, that seems like it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You tell me. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, this doesn't necessarily have a lot of bearing on the fact that they killed their first party development. This seems like it would matter more for third parties, but the fact that they made their hardware and their game development requirements Linux based, like
for Stadia.
Yeah. Cause that's kind of something people have been talking up as maybe a competitive advantage with Amazon's Luna stuff, because you're just running Windows versions of games there and not requiring a bespoke port that you might not otherwise sink time into if you weren't on Stadia.
I think you have to have, I think the Luna / GeForce Now approach is probably dramatically better if you want to get people on your platform, people on your platform without having to spend a buttload of money.
Totally. So like, what do you think? Do you have any insight into what might have driven that decision or what upsides there would be?
Oh, so probably all of their cloud stuff runs on Linux, and probably they didn't want to have to, build Windows versions of their, like Amazon offers Windows terminals as a cloud server option. I don't think Google does. So my guess is they didn't want to have like their backend shit just doesn't work on Windows would be my guess. So probably like down to the motherboard and chipset level, they don't have drivers for Windows for like core components of those racks. And therefore they do that for to emulate it in virtual machines, which is not super good, or something else. I don't know.
Well, maybe that starts to take us into the territory of like how projects are run inside of Google and then what determines what survives and what does not. Because like looking at the Stadia announcement, I don't know if you remember that stream from a couple of years ago. I guess it's been about 2 years now. They had a full on stage show. Like the CEO of Google came out. Like he doesn't come out for everything, for every product launch. You know, I mean, they hired people like Jade Raymond and Phil Harrison, who are like big kind of longtime industry executive names, content people. Like it seemed like they were getting behind it is the point I'm trying to make. Like there was a level of fanfare and kind of pomp around the launch of Stadia that you certainly don't see for every Google thing. But then you're talking about behind the scenes, maybe, you know, certain aspects of the company were not willing to build out massive infrastructure to support it in the way that it needed.
Well, I mean, yeah, not building out infrastructure is one thing, but like not going, that's like not supporting Windows on that is an example of not supporting the market that is the like on consumer space. Windows is the market leader for games by an enormous, ridiculous margin.
Yeah.
So rolling out a Linux project is going to say, okay, we're limiting, we're cutting out anything that EA, UB, and it's probably less of a deal for indies who are mostly using third-party game engines. So for example, if you're using Unity, it's not trivial, but it's not as difficult to cross compile a Linux version, right? If you're using Unreal, you can cross compile a Linux version. But a company like Supergiant that builds their own game engines has to then do the work of porting that thing over. And that's somebody it's at least one person working for months and months and months. So you're looking at easily $50,000, $100,000, $250,000, which is a ton for a small developer.
Right. Or like EA with Frostbite is probably a good big publisher example. Like I cannot imagine. I'd have to check and make sure that they don't ship stuff like Battlefield on Linux. I'm sure they do don't, not. Though.
Yeah,
I can assure you. So like something like, you know, a whole slate of Frostbite driven games, probably not going to get ported to Linux anytime soon. I don't know.
Well, yeah, like fuck, man, they can't get Frostbite to work on PC and PS3 until recently, PS4 until recently. So, yeah. no, you're not going to see Frostbite on Stadia anytime soon. I don't think if it's, I didn't realize it was a Linux based thing.
Yes.
That makes a ton of sense though.
Yes. That was kind of one of the big data points about it when it first launched. I actually just pulled up a press release about from last year about EA getting into Stadia, but it's stuff like Jedi Fallen Order, which is an Unreal game.
Yeah,
and stuff like that. So,
if you want that stuff to work, you can do that, but you have to spend a shitload of money, right? Like you have to throw money at it in a big way, or else people aren't going to buy in. Because, like, why is EA going to risk the $500,000, you know, $200,000 it'll take to port a B tier game to run on Linux if, you know, Google doesn't have some cheddar in the game?
Okay, well, that probably brings us fully into the second part of this episode. Because what company on the planet has more cheddar than Google? I mean, there might be a couple, but
Apple, Exxon,
right? So
maybe Microsoft. Like, I don't know.
Like, how do we get to the point where, like, barely a couple of years after Stadia was announced, with all this fanfare, it feels like they're starting to cut and run before it ever really got started? Like, how does that? You know, you don't work at Google any more than I do. Like, we don't know.
Yeah.
How things go internally there, but like, is it just some massive bureaucracy with a bunch of different power bases working across purposes? And
I think that's Microsoft. That's the description I've always heard of Microsoft, where there's different divisions and different departments that are actively working to push their own narratives, whether it's Office versus Windows versus entertainment versus, you know, the thing I feel about that, my understanding of Google is that they are really, really focused on growth. And the things that grow and are growing it, like, they're not afraid to kill something that's not growing it at the pace that they want, even. So, like, where you or I have a business, and, you know, if the tech pod was growing at 10% per month, 10% new subscribers a month, I would be thrilled. I would be doing cartwheels, right? If Google has something that's growing at 10% per month, they're like, yeah, it's okay. We're never going to hit a billion users with this. Let's just shut it down and move on. Try again. And they do that all the time. Like, there's a website of all the shit that Google has killed.
Yes.
Because they do this so often. It's become a joke, kind of.
Yes. Killedbygoogle.com. We brought it up, I think, on the last email episode briefly, but maybe it's time to dig into it a little bit more. But I mean, like, is there just no concept of sunk cost to them whatsoever? Because, like, they, you know, they put quite a bit of effort into it.
Sunk cost fallacy is a fallacy for a reason, Brad.
Well, I guess so. It's just, yeah. again, it just seems like they invested more in Stadia than they have in few of their products. But
so if they had asked me before they launched Stadia, and obviously they did not, because who cares what I think, then I would have said, hey, if you want this to go and you want this thing to work, you need to spend a fuckload of money making sure that it has all of the games that people want to play. Because, like, yes, there's an argument for making the service for people who play these big live service games like Call of Duty and Destiny and stuff like that. But either you have to have enough people playing those games for this thing to work and the games to work, or you have to be able to make them cross platform with at least PC and ideally PS4 and Xbox as well. And it seems like Destiny is just the Stadia people playing with Stadia people, right?
I think. Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
That's how PUBG works. So it was like, that's PUBG added bots because of the Stadia version. I don't know. It's super, the whole thing's super, it's weird to me that you would spend this much money spinning this up. Probably, in reality, the video codec stuff that they're doing for games is probably applicable to a bunch of other stuff, because suddenly latency in video is making a lot more sense. And we're going to see that more as, like, AR stuff starts to show up too, I think.
Sure.
And that is the technological advancement on Stadia. That's, I think, the most interesting, is that they have a 1080p / I think up to 4K even capable video codec that isn't encumbered by licenses, that is developed in house, that is incredibly low latency to render. And that's a trip.
You can think of some other applications for that, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. What do you want to do with Killed by Google?
You want to start going down the list and naming things
line here, see what we got here. AngularJS. What do you think?
That's an open source front end framework.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's nerds that write web code that are really upset about that. It doesn't impact me. I was shocked that they killed Chrome apps though. Because that's the thing that let you package apps to, they're basically souped up extensions for Chrome.
Okay. So yeah, I've seen them advertising that stuff, but I wasn't quite sure what the distinction was. So is that just stuff like Docs and Sheets, like the standard?
Yeah.
But in plugin format, like
they're kind a of key part of Chromebook use.
Okay.
So if you have a Chromebook, then you probably have an icon on your desktop, whatever that thing's called, that is docs. There were like photo editors and all sorts of stuff that like needed more front end UI, like Chrome control over the UI Chrome than you can get in a typical extension. So I'm curious about that one. I like whether they killed it because they're extending extensions or because nobody was using it or because it was like, there also was a lot of malware in that section too. So maybe that's the real reason. Hangouts, something I used daily for years.
Totally. And like now there's Google Meet and I've used both extensively and I could not tell you what the difference is.
Well, so Hangouts is still embedded in Gmail because there are two people that I talk to in there all the time.
Still with Hangouts. Well, you've still got another Hangouts. 5 months, 4 months.
I got to get Joey's cell phone number.
you've got another 4 months to hang out with Joey before they shut this thing off.
No, not Joey. But yeah, they've done, there's probably a whole section down here of like the text replacements / video conferencing replacements. Cause they had Allo and whatever the other one was, it was supposed to be like iMessage for Android, but it didn't fail over to SMS when you didn't have somebody on that system. So that meant anytime you tried to text somebody from there with an iOS account, it just went into the ether and disappeared or failed, which was great. Loon? They killed Loon?
What is Loon?
Oh, Loon was a Google X project where they were using these huge, long duration stratospheric balloons to provide Wi-Fi to disaster areas and undeveloped parts of the world.
Not or not profitable Wi-Fi, enough, but
internet
huh?
service.
Not showing enough growth.
Look,
disaster relief is not a growth market, Google.
I would bet they looked at Starlink and were like, probably this balloon thing is going to be way harder than having a bunch of satellites.
That's fair. Starlink is SpaceX's thing. Is that right?
It's SpaceX's cell service. They're apparently starting to hit people for pre-orders. And it's like if you're beyond DSL range, like my parents live in rural Virginia and they can't get DSL or cable modems there. So right now they have a cellular modem on a tower. That's a fixed antenna tower to a 4G tower that gives them like 5 megabits each way. So see this, Starlink would be good for them.
See the story going around recently about the guy who kind of de facto started his own ISP because he couldn't get good internet where he lived. And he was just like, screw this. I'm just going to invest the
Dude, that happens all the time.
$150,000 or whatever it was to get a line run in. And then I will just start leasing it to my neighbors and it'll end up paying it for itself in like a year.
Yep. Yeah. There's like, if you live on a place with a hill in the country, you can do that great. Like especially if there's already a town, like the guy that my parents buy internet from gave rights to build a tower on a hill and his cow, the cows were pasturing on, and he retained rights to put his own shit on that tower when he did the deal. So Verizon came in or Sprint or somebody came in and built a big ass cell phone tower on top of this hill for him. And then he just has to climb up it and pay somebody to dangle off antennas every once in a while when somebody new signs on. And he has like a DS3 or OC3 or something coming to his house now. So yeah, good for him.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. In rural ass Virginia.
That's better than gigabit. I'll try to remember to put the Ars Technica link that I found in the show notes from last month. Jared Mosch in somewhere in Michigan. Pull quote, I had to start a telephone company to get internet access.
Oof.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
This Google Home Max one is a trip. This thing's like a year, 2 years, 3 years old, I guess.
I was actually going to mention how grim the language is on most of these.
It's intentionally grim.
Oh, I know that. I mean, there's a reason there are icons of guillotines next to most of these.
Well, those are the grapes. Ones that are not dead yet, but are in the chopping block.
And gravestones. I mean, yes, the whole thing is a little macabre, but killed 22 days ago, getting unplugged in 5 months.
RIP.
Actually, the part where every one of these items ends with, it was about 4 years old.
Yeah.
It will be over 3 years old. There's like something really awful and like childlike about the way that they word this stuff.
Look, they're using the time command, right?
Yeah.
Nest Secure was a made your Nest doorbell cameras into security cameras.
Has the whole Nest thing been ruined? Like, I feel like I just see nothing but people complaining about how much worse it's gotten after it got bought.
I don't know that I had any Nest stuff before it was bought.
Okay.
So I don't know what it was like before. Thermostat's fine.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I have. I from a feature set perspective and an Amazon being shitty perspective, I would advise absolutely everyone to get rid of their Ring doorbells if that's what they have, because Amazon shares stuff with police departments and has, like, they're doing this new thing where they share your internet connection with other Ring users.
What?
In the other Ring users' devices. So, like, if you have better Wi-Fi at your property line with your neighbor and they have a Ring camera on the property line, then they'll use your Wi-Fi through the other Ring devices on your network. You got to, like, get away, like, avoid Ring. Whereas the Nest thing, if you have unlimited upstream, does some really neat stuff. Like, they do face recognition. So your Nest tells you that it was the UPS person and not, like, a solicitor when there's somebody at the door.
Huh.
Which is creepy, but also seems really useful.
Yeah.
Play Music is a big one. This was like 9 years old. People are pissed about it.
That was one of the few on here that I actually used for some period of time, like paid for.
I had it free with the YouTube TV for a while.
Yeah, I can't remember which end I bought in on. I can't remember if I bought in on YouTube Red / TV or if I paid for Play Music. But anyway, I don't know what the distinction is, but I see nothing but complaints about YouTube Music, which is the successor to this or the replacement for it.
Yeah, I know multiple people who've asked me for Spotify information because they're getting off of YouTube. This Google Photos print one is really silly. As a Google Photos subscriber, the idea that I would pay money to have Google pick out the 10 best photos from the last month and mail them to me.
What?
Is like, I mean, maybe if the price was right, I would have done that, but it seems kind of expensive. It didn't even make it a whole year.
Especially because, I mean, obviously they're just picking those photos algorithmically, right?
Well, it does a really good job picking photos algorithmically that are at least hilarious. So, like, when they're bad, they're hilariously bad.
Sure.
Because we have one of the Nest hubs in the kitchen, and it has just like our hit photos from the last month cycle through it. And it's pretty good.
Like, I had my iPhone do the, I've never seen it do this before. This is actually my first experience with this feature, period. But it automatically assembled a little, like, slideshow video presentation of, like, photo memory stuff. It was, like, I think it did it at the end of last year or so, a couple months ago. And it was just like, here, we've put together your best memories from 2020. And because, you know, who the hell went anywhere and took pictures of anything in 2020? Yeah. It was nothing but pictures of food. It was entirely pictures of food. Including a video that it inserted right in the middle with some really ridiculous jazz music where I had caught my fork wobbling on the edge of the plate. And I took like 30 seconds of video of it. And it just shoved that right there in the middle of the, I think it was on my Thanksgiving plate. And it was the most ridiculous, like, assembled by robots kind of situation that I've had in some time.
So the Google one is really, the way Google does it is really neat. The things that show up on the Nest in the kitchen are like, sometimes it pulls from a bunch of different buckets. And one of them is like on this day in past years or around this day in past years. Some of them are things that it knows, like if it sees a cake in the picture or something like that, it'll know that that's like a celebration of some kind. It'll group some celebration pictures from the same time together. Some of it's like something that if two of the people that it knows live in the house, this is really creepy as I say this stuff out loud, but when it knows, since it knows that three of us live here, if there's two people in the photo and one person's not, it'll put that up because it thinks that maybe I want to see the picture of my wife and kid on a walk.
That is a little bit much.
I mean, look, I can also search for cat and it shows me all the pictures of cats. So, like, you get some convenience in there.
Pros and cons, right?
Yeah. Oh, remember hosting all of our podcasts on Hangouts on Air, number one service for having dropped video and audio if you wanted to do a production with a bunch of people on a YouTube stream?
No.
Rip. It was bad.
Okay.
God, I use so much of this stuff. Wow, they killed YouTube Gaming. I missed that one.
Wait.
The gaming vertical for YouTube?
How did
that was in 2019.
I also missed that. What the hell?
Inbox by Gmail. Never forget. The best email client I've ever used.
That I was going to say, I think that of everything on this list that I've scrolled through is probably the thing that I saw the biggest outcry around when they killed it.
No, Google Reader was the biggest outcry.
Reader, you think so?
Yeah, because Reader was all the, like, no normal people use readers, but every journalist and huge, extremely online person.
Was that just Reader? Like some kind of RSS parser or something?
God, did you not use it? It was fabulous.
I might have used it. I don't know, maybe.
Imagine if you had Gmail's tag, like label functionality on news feeds, and you dump all your feeds in there and it would prioritize the ones that it didn't do any algorithmic sorting. So you could just scroll through and pick you could put stuff in buckets based on the source or the author. And so, like, if you only wanted to get Stephen Totilo posts from Kotaku, you could really easily do that. And you could have like a top feed of all of the people that you like to read. It was very good.
That actually does sound pretty good.
Yeah, but only nerds used it, so yeah, it got killed.
What was up with Inbox? Like, is that an alternate email client to the actual Gmail experience?
Yeah, Inbox was purchased. It was an acquisition, and it was a Gmail. It was a custom Gmail client that. Let's see, how did it work? It kind of sorted things into buckets the way Gmail does now. So, like, you had like. Purchase stuff, and you had like newsletters, and you had like the kind of spam that comes from signing up for forums and news groups and stuff like that. And it would sort them all, and it would let you put all of the things in one category in the main inbox in like a thing that you could blow up if you wanted, but you could just blow past it if you needed to. And it would let you turn on notifications based on a single person. So, like, if I wanted to always see notifications when you sent me an email, because you rarely send emails and they're usually important, then I could do that, which was incredibly useful.
That sounds very useful, actually. Yes.
If you had a high volume inbox, it was incredibly powerful. If you didn't, low value.
I do have a high volume inbox, but I still don't trust algorithmic email sorting. I just call me paranoid. I'm just too worried I'm going to miss something.
If it's something really important, they text you.
Which means that I invariably miss something because I'm sorting through like a couple hundred emails.
That's the thing is like, yeah. For what it's worth, Hey has almost replaced Inbox in my heart, but it's $100 a year. So your mileage may vary.
So you're still with them?
I'm still using Hey.
Still on board.
Yeah, it does. I'm down at the beginning. I was filtering between 30 and 50 email addresses a day. Now it's usually 10 or 12. So, you know, I don't know. It's bad. Chromecast audio. That was a cool thing. And this is bumming me out.
Glass OS was a version of Google's Android for Google Glass. Remember Google Glass?
I have a pair of Google Glass in my garage.
I can't even say Google Glass three times fast.
It was really hard to say.
But you still have them?
I still have a pair.
Huh.
I haven't plugged them in years. The battery's probably exploded.
I should hope not.
The Google search appliance, this was a cool thing. You could plug it into your intranet. Remember those? And it would run Google indexes on your document shares.
Huh. Interesting.
So you could Google your file server. It's weird.
That is weird.
And it would be off the main index. Like, it would be private, was the gist.
There are some really dumb names in here.
Yeah.
Songza.
Oh, man, they killed Soundstage. That's a bummer. I think that one got open. Oh, the other thing we were going to talk about is Tiltbrush. Tiltbrush, they basically said, hey, dog, we're just going to end up. This is dead, but it's open source now, so you can make it your own, which is actually a cool way to kill stuff, I guess.
Do you think, and I mean, not that we have any special insight, but do you think they were just going to kill it and then somebody like went to bat for letting it live on in an open format instead?
I would say there's probably enough people using that if they hadn't made it somewhat maintainable in the future in some way, there would have been like they turned a bad press situation to a good press situation. Sure. By taking the effort to make that open.
Yeah.
What else? I'm going to scroll down a lot.
I'm just Schemer. Yeah. I'm just going through looking at all these bad product names now. Bump with an exclamation mark.
Oh, I remember that. That's when they added NFC, so you could bump the phones together.
Yes.
And the accelerometer would register the movement and hit the NFC tag and be like, okay, I know you.
Yeah, transfer contact information now. Yeah.
It was kind of like squirting music from Zune to Zune.
Yeah.
Ugh. Oh, man. Oh, the Nexus Q was that they did a big deal about that. That was the digital audio player that they showed. Like it was it looked like a pre-Nest or Alexa. It was a little tiny orb and it was all loaded with speakers and stuff, but no microphones, I think. Google Talk, remember that? Google G-Chat.
What was Google? Is that what that was?
Yeah, it was an XMPP protocol.
Right, yes. I used to log into that through Pigeon.
Uh-huh. Or Trillion would work too.
What are you chatting on now? Is that Hangouts that you're technically typing into?
Yeah, so they killed Talk. They renamed Talk Hangouts, I think, is what technically happened. Okay. And they took out the XMPP support, maybe. I can't remember.
God, remember IM clients? Jeez.
Yeah, those were good days. Picnic became Google Photos. Some of these are not actually killed. Some of them got converted into other things. Sparrow was the email client that became Inbox.
I remember Sparrow.
Yeah.
Huh, okay.
It was $10 in the App Store.
Started on mobile, right?
Uh-huh.
I think I used Sparrow for a little while.
Google Wave, the stuff from it ended up getting rolled into Docs and all that stuff. But that was like anybody can write in the document anytime. It would support infinite users and all that stuff.
Right. I'm amazed we've made it this far without talking about Google Plus.
Nobody ever needs to talk about Google Plus again.
Right. It's not even on here.
Do you remember Google Buzz? That was the social networking, microblogging, and messaging tool that was integrated with Gmail.
Sure.
It predated Plus.
I'll take your word for it.
Remember, they gave you a place to make public statements inside the place that you make private statements, and nothing possibly could ever go wrong with that.
Yes, of course. I don't know how Plus is not on this list, actually.
It's on the list. You just missed it. It's up near the top.
Search for the word Plus.
Yeah, you got to search for a Plus.
Oh, like a literal plus sign?
Literal plus
sign. Is that what the branding was?
Yep, Google Plus.
Why?
2011 to 2019. Killed almost 2 years ago.
I don't know why in my memory it was a spelled out full word, but
it's because bad branding.
Yeah. What do you think is the most mocked product on this list? Plus, probably. Like the most
Dodgeball. Like
the target of the target Nobody of the mocks most
Dodgeball anymore.
Wait, what is Dodgeball?
Dodgeball was a social media for location-based social media. So it was a startup they bought.
Oh, but that's like early social 2003.
It was
early social media.
Yeah.
I think Plus is by far the target of the greatest mockery on this list.
Google Plus was bad.
Yeah. Remember Circles?
Buzz was bad though. I think Buzz was actually worse than Plus. Which is it's really possible. Saying something.
It's entirely possible. You're right. Yeah. Like they list Grand Central on here as being killed, but it flat out says acquired by Google and turned into Google Voice, which is going strong.
Yeah. And Google Voice is basically like they've done basically nothing to it since Grand Central. Since they shut down Grand Central.
Yeah.
I guess Plus is probably the thing most worthy of mocking here. I don't know. Maybe the Google TV stuff. Did you ever actually see the Google TV we had at tested? It had, you know how the Apple remote for the Apple TV has like five buttons on it, six buttons. And it's really lovely and smart. And like, it's simple to use. And like anybody picks it up and you know exactly what you do. And like, this is where you press and this is where how you move the cursor and all that.
Yeah.
The Google TV, the original Google TV remote, the one that we got from Sony, was about the size of a big PDA from the late 90s. Mind you, this is in 2010 or 2011.
Oh my God.
It had a full keyboard. It had two D-pads.
I'm looking at it right now.
Are you looking at the Sony one?
Holy shit. Yes. What in the world? Who thought this was a good idea?
No one.
This is
literally
grotesque.
No one. Also, it didn't work. Like there were no apps. I don't even think you could get Netflix on it. Why you launch something without Netflix, even in 2010, was shocking. Oh,
it's even better that the photo I managed to find is of a very grungy, extremely used one.
Ugh.
It just looks filthy.
Gross.
Oh, now we have an episode image.
Gross.
Yeah, I don't know why I wanted to try to ascertain like what is the most mocked product on here. I think it's just because the Valley Press seems so vicious. A lot of the time.
Google Pi was really stupid too. That was when they tried to come at Slack with a terrible thing. And they called it Pi.
That's nothing about the word pie. Google's makes me want to
again.
Talk to people about work. It just makes me want to eat pie. Of course, to be fair, I guess the word Slack doesn't necessarily promote the desire to work either.
Yeah, but they were the first ones that did it. So, you know,
that's fair.
The Chromebook Pixel was really ridiculous too. It was $1,000 Chromebook, which is insane.
I saw that on here. I assume the regular Chromebook line is still trundling right along, right?
Selling bazillions of them this year.
Really?
Half of the school systems have them. Like my school system handed them out to everybody who didn't have a computer.
No kidding. Wow.
When the quarantine started.
Are they still x86 based?
I don't think all of them are. I think they're a mixture of ARM and x86. Huh. I'm not sure.
Google,
what are you going to do?
They've kill stuff. Yeah. it's a force of nature. It's a fact of life at this point.
I mean, look, I'm sure there's an equally long list someplace of products that Google hasn't killed. They got search, they got ads, they got all that cloud hosting crap. They got Keep. That one's probably not long for the world, though, because you looked at me, you just gave me the what the hell is Keep look. I'm sure there's other things. They do stuff.
Google's going to do what Google's going to do.
That's it. Is this the time of the show when we think? Oh, first off, next week, I believe.
Yes.
Well, in the next 2 weeks, we're going to do a Q&A episode, an email episode.
Okay.
So if you have emails, you should send them in to techpod@content.town.
Yes.
That's techpod@content.town.
Oh my God, we're going to be back on the last week of the month schedule for emails.
Yes, we are.
Incredible.
But I wanted to prime that pump before we get to that point. And then they can be about stuff we've talked about on the show. They can be about random stuff that you have questions about. Send them in. We don't care. Brett, no cannibalism, please. That's my request.
Oh boy. What have we done?
Look, when you have to put a, please don't send any more emails about cannibalism in, that's a real turning point for any young podcast.
Yeah.
But it's the time of the show where we thank our patrons.
Yes.
Thank you, patrons.
We really you so
appreciate
much.
You. Yes. If you want to be a patron of the show and support the show, with money instead of just time, which we appreciate either one, really, then for $2 a month, you can get access to the fabulous TechPod Discord, where you, can hang out with like 1,500 other wonderful nerds and talk about all sorts of things. We just started a science channel. Did you do
that? Yes, we did. I did that. In fact,
I assumed you did.
Someone, I mean our friend Doug Ellison from JPL.
Science Doug, we call him.
If anyone were in a position to request a science channel, I would say it's him.
Look, if Doug asks for a channel, I'm going to give Doug a channel. That's all. He gets. He's been a double guest. He's the first double guest. So,
I mean, if anybody else on the server also drives robots on other planets, they too can request a science channel.
Look, and actually. You don't have to be Doug to request a channel.
You're right. That's a pretty high bar. Anybody actually can request. Yes, like, but we do.
Yeah, Chapel asked for a F1 racing channel once, and we made that happen. So, or sports channel, maybe.
Yes. Especially with, I mean, that's what we had Doug on to talk about, but with Perseverance landing next week, or is it the week after?
The 18th.
So
6 days from today.
Holy crap. That is less
Wednesday,
than a week from the time of this recording. Even less time by the time you hear this.
Thursday, Wednesday, good, something good. Next week sometime.
It's good that we have that channel so people can talk about the landing now.
Yeah.
I gotta find out what time that's happening. I kind of want to follow along.
It's around lunchtime.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
11:30 is what Kishore said the other day. Oh,
that's exciting.
They'll know. I think when we talked to Doug a few weeks ago, it was 12:38 is what they were shooting for. But
I'm sorry. I have to say, I'm just to push the Discord here. When you mentioned the Discord, I opened it briefly.
Yeah,
when did you land on? Someone who is a veteran of the Navy saying, what I feel like every time I tell my old Navy stories, and they posted a picture of Cup from Transformers, the movie. So this is a good server to align with my personal interests, at least.
That's pretty good. If you want to get in on the Discord, you can. We do a patron exclusive podcast once a month. All sorts of good stuff all the time. And you can find out about that at Patreon. TechPod. Nope. You can find out about that at patreon.com/techpod.
There you go.
And always, as always, we want to thank our executive producer level patrons, The Bunny Fiend, Jacob Chappell, David Allen, and James Kamek. Thank you all so much.
Yes,
and thanks, everybody, whether you listen, whether you back the Patreon, whether you tell your friends, we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Also, TechPod folks pushed my daughter almost to her cookie goal last week.
Oh, my God.
So,
that's amazing.
If anybody wants some Girl Scout cookies, you don't know any Girl Scouts in real life, you can find cookies at cookies.techpod.com.
Do you just get is there just a thermometer filling up on your end, or do you get actual breakdowns of like who's buying what or what is selling the most?
Yeah, because like theoretically in a normal year, we would deliver them by hand.
Sure. Well, I mean, this current wave, I'm just curious what's
you mean? I don't think I have data analytics about which cookies are the most popular, unfortunately. But let me look and see.
My girlfriend that's got some coworkers, daughter selling at her workplace.
Yeah.
And it was suggested in the course of all that happening that nobody likes the lemon ones.
Fuck them. The lemon ones are dope.
Okay.
Those people are giving you bad information.
I mean, they're not my favorite, to be clear, but I thought that was maybe a little harsh toward the lemon ups.
Look, if you want to talk about my official stated policy is that all Girl Scout cookies rip.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, you know what? Cookies are better than no cookies. I'll say that.
But what I'm going to say right now, this is just between you and me. We're not going to put this out. Nobody like, shh. Samoas kind of suck, dude.
What? No.
Coconut. No. Don't eat coconut. Coconut's bad.
What? Why?
It's just gross.
Is it actually bad or is it just personal preference?
No, I just don't like it. I think it tastes bad.
Coconut's fine.
If I was stack ranking the Girl Scout cookies, Thin Mints number one with a bullet. Lemon Ups number two. Do-si-dos, those peanut butter sandwich cookies. Number three, Trefoils number four.
We have extraordinarily different taste in Girl Scout cookies. S'mores.
Very good. The s'mores. Mm. I might actually put the s'mores up above the do-si-do when I think about it, because it's the better sandwich cookie now.
I have not had the s'mores. I might be. I could see that. The do-si-dos are very good. I think Samoas are just fine. Thin Mints, I feel, are very fairly middle of the pack.
Wow.
We got a box, though, and they went straight in the freezer. So I had frozen Thin Mints, which was quite an experience.
If you never had frozen Thin Mints, you got to put them in the freezer.
I don't think I had ever. I didn't really seek out Thin Mints. Like I said, you know, they're a mid-tier.
Do you not like mint?
That's fine.
Do you not like chocolate?
It's fine. It reminds me a little bit of toothpaste.
If you're using chocolatey toothpaste, man, that is messed up.
That's not the part that I think tagalongs might be my number one.
You know, the peanut butter and tagalongs. I like the tagalong, but I don't like that kind of like cookie/candy peanut butter is not my favorite thing.
Really? Oh, yeah. Man, it's like a Reese's peanut butter cup in cookie form.
So, yeah, I don't know. Unfortunately, I don't get a breakdown by variety of cookie.
Oh, that's a shame.
It's a real letdown for all of us.
I would love to know. God damn it.
I mean, I could go through manually and find it.
I have to close this. Nothing against your daughter, but I have to close this page.
Look, you should just get some cookies, Brad.
I'm not supposed to be eating cookies right now.
Don't eat cookies right now. They're bad for you. But yeah, that's cookies.content.town. We'll see you all next week, I guess.
You guess?
I mean, I'm not going anywhere.
So I want to hear a little more certitude here, please.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see y'all next week.